This message comes from NPR sponsor Planet Oat. No deep thinking here. Planet Oat oat milk is rich, creamy, and an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D. Also, Planet Oat's unsweetened varieties have 0 grams of sugar. Visit planetoat.com for more.
You're listening to Shortwave from NPR.
It's July, and here in Washington, D.C., that means hot, sweaty, sticky days. Sarah Everts hears complaints about sweaty summers a lot. She's the author of the new book, The Joy of Sweat.
I've always kind of worried that I might sweat a little bit too much or sweat more than average. And, you know, I think that that's something that a lot of people feel.
Me too.
Right? And as a science journalist, I just kind of thought, well, hey, I can learn more about this thing that we all do and, you know, perhaps find a little serenity in it.
As Sarah dug into the fascinating science of sweat, she learned that it's an evolutionary marvel, a highly efficient way to prevent our bodies from overheating.
We effectively dispatch water to our skin, and as it evaporates, it whisks heat away from our bodies. And in order to do that, it kind of is most efficient on a naked surface. And lo and behold, we are the naked ape.
Compare that to how furry mammals cool down, like dogs or chimps.
They pant, and so they stick out their tongue and evaporate saliva off their most naked part, which is their tongue. But instead of, you know, relying on like a very small amount of real estate, we have our whole body off of which we can evaporate liquid.
Sweating allowed our species to survive and thrive. It allowed us to adapt to very hot places, to run long distances without overheating, which enabled our ancestors to chase and catch prey because the prey would tire out faster.
And so it's actually this incredible kind of superpower that we have.
And anyone who's embarrassed or grossed out by sweat, Sarah says, think again. It could have been so much worse.
So like vultures will poop on their legs. It's very liquidy to evaporate that liquid off. Seals will urinate on themselves to also evaporatively cool their bodies, right? And so, you know, when you know what could have been, what evolution may have bequeathed us, sweat is arguably a million times better, right? Like at least we're all just sweating, not peeing, pooping, and licking ourselves to coolness.
Today we explore this distinctly human function. Sarah Everts explains how it works and why we should rejoice in our sweat. I'm Ritu Chatterjee. You're listening to Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, VCU Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center. Every year, millions of people lose someone to cancer. But as an NCI-designated comprehensive cancer center ranked in the country's top 4%, VCU Massey Comprehensive Cancer Center is unrelenting in finding new ways to understand, detect, treat, and prevent cancer. Unconditionally committed to keeping loved ones in their lives. Learn more at MasseyCancerCenter.org/comprehensive.
So Sarah, in your book, The Joy of Sweat, you write that too, sweat is human. So how much someone sweats is sort of a mix of their genetics and also where they grew up, right?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because these glands, they're called eccrine glands, that's what scientists call them. Mm. You're born with like all the eccrine glands that you'll ever have, but when you are in your toddler years is when they all fully become active. And so in those very early years of your life, your body is kind of learning about the climate that you're in. And researchers are, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how much of the environment in which you spent your early years is, you know, ultimately going to affect how much you sweat as an adult. And so that's like the nurture part. But of course, there's also a nature part. You know, some people are just sweatier than others, and some families are. And, you know, perhaps you have, you know, more sweat glands than average. Most people have between 2 and 5 million. I got mine counted. I have 3 million.
Wow.
Probably TMI. And, you know, there's also the flow rate, right? So, you know, some people, you know, are very efficient with their sweating, and some, you know, the floodgates just open right up. And so that's also possibly related to genetics, but also possibly related to, you know, acclimatization and your body learning on the go. I mean, athletes do this, right? Like in preparing for, you know, the Olympics in a really hot place, they will try to train in very similar conditions so that their bodies learn to cool them down efficiently in that kind of environment.
And as you write in the book that despite sweat's main role as a way to cool our bodies, sweat itself, the contents of it is so much more than water, right? The salt, for one.
Oh, yeah. So this was the thing that really blew my mind. So, you know, when you think about sweat, it took me a long time until I was writing this book to be like, where is it really coming from? And it's effectively the liquidy parts of blood, minus the big stuff like red blood cells and platelets and immune cells. And so, you know, if you open up a body, you're very wet inside, right? You have this thing called interstitial fluid that's keeping all your organs damp and moist, right?
Right.
And that liquid is sourced from blood. And when your body gets the cool down directive, then your sweat glands source sweat from that interstitial fluid. And so literally anything that's in your blood that's small can percolate out. So, you know, evidence of my morning coffee comes out in my sweat. When I have a drink of gin and tonic on a hot day, definitely the alcohol comes out. Evidence of the food we eat, evidence of our health, or even how we're exercising.
Yeah. And a story that you write about in the book about the, I think, was it a South African nurse whose sweat turned red?
Yeah. So, to be this woman. So she was a nurse and wore a white uniform and noticed, that her sweat was red. And, you know, this is a very strange situation, right?
I would freak out.
Yeah, I would freak out. So she was really insecure about it and went to a dermatologist who got really interested. Uh-huh. But they could not for the longest time figure out what was going on because she was in her 20s. She was perfectly healthy. You know, they checked her for everything. Anyway, this one day she comes to the clinic for a follow-up appointment. And one of the doctors notices her fingers are kind of stained, like a reddish brown color. And it turns out she had had a pre-appointment snack, and it was this corn chip called spicy tomato. She was very fond of these chips. Like, she was eating multiple bags a day, like very fond. Like, the dermatologist called it a fetish. And it turns out, you know, they analyzed her sweat for, you know, the same colorants and dyes as the chips and, you know, got a match. And so effectively, once she dialed down her predilection for these particular chips, her red sweat disappeared. But, you know, other people have turned their sweat all sorts of colors for all sorts of reasons. It's kind of like a funny little corner of the medical literature called chrome hydrosis, chrome like colored, and hydrosis for sweat.
So fascinating. So about the other components that sort of leak out into sweat, do they have any role?
So, what's coming out of your sweat pores, the like entire medical role for it, your biological role is to keep you cool. Mm-hmm. But in the process, your body also, dispatches, some proteins that do crowd control, for the microbiome of your skin, right? So helping the helpful bacteria thrive and, you know, trying to keep, pathogens at bay. But most of the stuff that comes out in this, watery sweat called eccrine sweat is just what happens to be, you know, flowing around your body. Of course, there is another kind of sweat, the stuff that makes you really stinky. That's the sweat that comes out in your armpits. It's actually an entirely different kind of sweat gland. It's called the apocrine gland, and it gets active at puberty, right? As we all know, or as many of us know. And that sweat is not like salt water at all. It's kind of like waxy, a little bit similar to earwax. But a lot more minute. And the bacteria living in your armpits, eat that sweat and metabolize it, as the science jargon goes, and effectively poop out what is the body odor that comes from your armpit.
And so does body odor change depending on kind of the content of your sweat and the mix of bacteria that are metabolizing the sweat?
Exactly. And so we all have a unique body odor print, right? We all have our own smell.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is effectively the mix of waxy molecules coming out of those apocrine glands, plus the unique to you ecosystem of bacteria living in your armpit. And so that combination is what gives you your unique odor print and mine, and allows dogs, for example, to track humans based on, you know, having sniffed something that they've worn.
Right. Now, you know, as essential as sweat is to our physiology, you write that it is relatively poorly understood by scientists. Why is that? And what are the things we still don't understand or know about sweating?
Right. So, you know, scientists have studied sweat, so I don't want to like give that impression. But if you just look at the scientific literature, other bodily fluids get so much more attention. And
right.
Some of the really interesting areas are, you know, the evolution of sweat glands and how, you know, we actually came to be have evolved one of the most efficient ways to cool down in the animal kingdom. We don't even know how many genes are involved in sweating. And, you know, a lot of other really fabulous research is still going on, trying to, for example, do the forensics of science, like monitoring what is coming out when we sweat and, you know, monitoring what are the chemical residues in a fingerprint, because like a fingerprint is just a sweat print. And forensic researchers are now able to learn all about your biological identity from the actual chemicals left behind in the fingerprint. If you can analyze the chemicals of that fingerprint and find out, wow, that person was, you know, drinking alcohol, or that person actually has cancer. All sorts of very private information is being, you know, left behind in the drips we leave on our yoga mats, but also literally on everything that we touch.
Sarah Everts is a science journalist and the author of the new book, The Joy of Sweat. This episode was produced by Rebecca Ramirez, edited by Giselle Grayson, and fact-checked by Indy Kara. Josh Newell was the audio engineer. I'm Ritu Chatterjee. Thanks for listening to Shortwave, the daily science podcast from NPR.
Good question.
That's a really good question.
It's a great question.
This is free therapy.
Thank you for asking me that.
God, that's such a good question.
That's an interesting question.
But what Fresh Air interviews are really about are the interesting answers. Listen and subscribe to Fresh Air from WHYY and NPR.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Easy Cater. Committed to helping companies, from nonprofits to the Fortune 500, find food for meetings and company events. With online ordering and 24/7 live support, learn more at easycater.com.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Moms know the ups and downs of life. It's what makes them great subjects for books.
This is one of the things that fiction can do, right? It can give us a window into the battles that each person is waging or facing, but it doesn't mean that we condone her actions.
This week on NPR's Book of the Day podcast, we are discussing books centering mothers. So call your mom, then tune into the Book of the Day podcast from NPR.